What the president said and did not say about health care for the immigrants he wants to let stay in the U.S. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. China's central bank just now dropped two key interest rates to stimulate the economy there. Couple this with a statement today from Europe's central bank chief saying he is willing to, quote, step up the pressure to stimulate euro countries. How this pair of efforts to breathe life into two dominant pieces of the world economy is playing out in the markets? Let's check the numbers. Yes, the 100-share index in London is up 0.7%. The DAX in Germany is up 1.7%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up in the 0.6% range at the moment. The key stock index in Hong Kong closed up 0.4%, but it closed before China's interest rate drop. The euro is down about 0.9% to $1.2433. Now, you've been hearing about President Obama's speech last night announcing he'll protect some 5 million undocumented workers from deportation. However, the president will not allow this group to get health care coverage under the Affordable Care Act, something advocates have fought for fiercely. Dan Gorenstein joins us now from the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY in Philadelphia. Dan, let's start off with the basics. Why is health care not part of this package?
Well, leading up to his speech, administration officials talked about how the president, through the executive order, just didn't have the legal authority to do it. The White House wanted a plan that was, quote, legally unassailable. That said, one researcher I spoke with, Sonia Schwartz, with Georgetown's Center for Children and Families, says she sees some under-the-radar health benefits that do come with this executive order.
People won't have to fear deportation. They'll be able to work legally and pay taxes, and they'll just generally, their whole family will be way less stressed out.
Now, I've reported on the impact of ongoing stress and anxiety before. It can have a physiological effect on a person's health. Beyond that, Schwartz did a study recently and found there are more than 1 million Latino children who are eligible for health insurance like Medicaid, but are unenrolled. She hopes when people get more protections, they'll be more likely to sign their kids up for coverage.
Okay, so while children may get some coverage, it looks like their parents will not. Many people are low-wage workers in this category. What might be the economic effect of people being uninsured like this?
Well, for a long time, people have debated whether being uninsured drove health costs up or down, and it's easy to imagine uninsured people going without until things get out of hand and costs go through the roof. But Kate Baker from Harvard has looked at this very question.
Insured people consume more doctor's office visits, hospital visits, emergency department visits, and that translates to about 30% more healthcare use.
So to be clear about this, if Obama had extended access to insurance coverage, it would have helped those people, and it would have given more money to doctors, hospitals, insurers, and pharma. But it would have cost a lot more money in the form of more taxpayer subsidies.
Thank you, Dan. Now time for the Marketplace Inflation Calculator. In honor of Marketplace's 25th anniversary this year, we're looking at some of the surprising ways that prices have changed over the last quarter century. Today, art, specifically the prices of art considered so fine it's worth millions. Blake Gopnik is critic at large for ArtNet.com and a contributor to the New York Times. Blake, good to see you.
Good morning, David. Happy 25th birthday.
Well, thank you very much. Now, just broad brush here. How have art prices changed over the last quarter century?
I think the most striking fact is that contemporary art has replaced great old masters like Rembrandt almost completely. That's what people are buying, and that's where the prices have really soared.
What, in painting and photography? Where?
Everything you can speak of, photography especially. Cindy Sherman, 1989, was already famous for her self-portraits, her staged photographs. But a really good Cindy Sherman sold for something like $3,000 in 1989. Last week, a very similar piece sold for $2 million. That's 700 times more. That's a pretty good return on your investment.
Now, you have some data that you've been crunching on just how much art purchases contribute to the net worths of some of these high net worth individuals. That's shifted over the years.
Yeah. Once upon a time, when people were buying the old masters, they were paying a pretty small percentage of their total fortunes. J.P. Morgan in 1901 made huge headlines for buying a great Raphael Madonna. He spent $400,000 on it. That was a lot of money then, something like $10 million today. But that was only 0.5% of his estimated fortune. Whereas today's tycoons are spending 7%, 3.5%, maybe 1.5% of their total fortunes. Elaine Wynn, billionaire, bought Francis Bacon's three studies of Lucian Freud for $142 million. And she was only worth, a paltry $2 billion. So that means, as I said, that she spent like 7% of her total net worth on one work of art.
So, Blake, we sent you on this little voyage through these prices, but what is your broader conclusion as you emerge from this little journey?
I don't think it's that the old-time moguls spent a smaller percentage of their fortune because they cared less about art. Quite the opposite. It's that the people today think of art as an investment, as an asset class. But the problem, of course, is that these are liquid assets that are built on really art historical values. And the problem with contemporary works is we won't know for a little while. I can give you a million examples of artists who seemed hotter than hot for 10 years, 20 years, and then boom, they're gone. Market disappears. No one cares about them. Whereas, you know what? I think we're still going to like Rembrandt in 20 years, 50 years, 100 years. Those were safe bets.
Well, that's what these high net worth individuals are often good at, taking on risk, because there's clearly some risk here. Blake Gopnik is critic at large for ArtNet News, also contributes to the New York Times. Blake, thank you.
Thank you, David.
From the price of the most popular car in America staying the same for 25 years to the cost of cell phone bills falling, all of our Marketplace inflation calculator stuff is at marketplace.org if you want to use it as a teaching tool in the classroom or simply for a game of Stump the Chump. There it is. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.